Please be seated. I'm going to invite our smallest members forward to gather here, and any adults that want to accompany them, please, adults, do come as well. At least a few of you. As you see, we have dirt laid out. So we have waded in far this morning. But gather around here, have a seat on the floor. Kids, come on down. Come on down.
Wait, over here.
Right here. So some of you may be wondering what in the world, and really if there are any young at heart that want to help out, we're going to do a gardening exercise in a moment. And so we've got 14 pots, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we've got 6 open spots if anybody wants to fill them. All right. I'm going to tell a story and see if we can make connections between all the things going on this morning. So I like you, have been noticing all the snow lately and been feeling a little bit of a need to do some springtime stuff. And this Sunday, we heard the gospel story of Jesus going up onto the mountain. And that story shows up not once, but 2 times in our Sunday calendar. And I gotta be honest with you, I have told all of my mountaintop stories at least 3 times here, and I was done with mountain stories. Maybe you all were too. So I thought, what other stories are connected here in this message? And then I heard the story of a chef. Some of you know that I like cooking. I really like chefs. And the story of Sean Brock is a chef from the South who has done amazing things to reinvigorate or to reintroduce Southern cooking to a popular audience. And one of the ways that he has reinvigorated Southern cooking is through the practice of seed saving. Now, you may not know what seed saving is. Do you know what seed saving is? Anybody? I'll tell you. So, seed saving is just like it sounds. People take the seeds of their best plants at the end of the year. Instead of harvesting the food and eating it, they let their best plants go to seed, and they save those seeds. And then they plant them the next spring so that their plants are even better than the plants the previous year. And so Sean had discovered some people who were doing seed saving. It was an almost lost art in the South, a lost tradition. And there were many strains of plants that had been lost to the tides of time because people were buying their seeds at the store. And on a whim, one afternoon, he took his mom for an outing to a seed-saving seminar with one of his local seed savers, which I'm sure some of the moms sitting here are thinking, boy, that just sounds like a great way to spend some time with my kids. They're not thinking that. He was a grown-up, though, and so they went to have a mom-son event, and they were standing there at the seed tray, and the gentleman that was the seed saver started to do the seminar, and he looked over at his mom, and she was crying. She had great tears running down her cheeks. Do you know why? Because on the table in front of them was a bowl of beans with her family name written on it, the Johnson name. You see, the practice of seed saving, house to house, farm to farm, garden to garden, has been a tradition all over this country and all over the world. And in the South, people name the bean or the pea or the carrot that they're growing after their house. So each household has a different strain of a certain kind of bean. And she was seeing her family's name on the table. Their being was there, being passed on to a new generation. And she was moved to tears. I think that's a lot like the Transfiguration story. They're up there on the mountaintop. Did you hear how Margaret read it? They're up there on the mountaintop, and Jesus takes his 2 best disciples, James and John, with him. And suddenly they're visited by 2 other great names of the faith, Moses and Elijah. Do you have a question?
No. I just want to know one of these stories about the mountains. At my preschool, there's a kid there that's named Elijah, too.
you know someone named Elijah. It's a great name, isn't it? I can't remember if Peter was or not. Was Peter up there?
Peter
was also up there. So we have good ears here. Yes, that's right. Thank you. So they've got Peter, James, and John, and Elijah and Moses. And there's Jesus in the middle. And I think that's sort of like the seed saving. Because on one side you have the tradition as it has arisen and it's been passed to Jesus. And Jesus is going to pass that tradition on to his disciples, who will pass it on to their disciples, and on to this place today. So what I want to do here in the middle of the sermon is an experiment in chaos. But I hope it's not. I'm going to give you each a few seeds to plant in some soil, and then we'll sprinkle some dirt on top, and then you can take those back to your pew, where Scott will chastise me later about the difficulty of vacuuming soil out of cushions. Okay? So why don't we do this? We're going to pause mid-sermon for our illustration and plant something, all right? So everybody stand up. And each of these pots has written on it the words faith, hope, and love. So that when it grows this spring, you'll be able to be reminded of faith, hope, and love handed to you. So I'm going to go ahead and take two or three. Take two or three. You want to hold out your hand? Here's a few. And a few. So what I want you to do is poke your finger down in the soil the number of times you have seeds. And if you only want to do three or four, that's fine. Some of you ended up with more than that.
Put them in different spots.
So poke your finger down in there, and then drop the seeds in the pot, okay? And while you do that, I'm going to come around with a second pot, and we can sprinkle dirt over the top, okay? You want to take a little handful of dirt, put it over top? Here you go. Take a little handful of dirt, and put it over the top, and then pack it down. All right, here you go. We are getting our hands into spring, even though it's winter outside right now, people. I'm going to take a little handful of dirt.
I'm going to wash my hands.
And put it in. A little. There you go. All right, once you've got yours packed down, you can take it with you back to your pew. But you can also take a hand wipe because, you know, moms and dads like it when they have clean hands at the pew. So while you guys finish your gardening, I'm going to keep telling the story, all right? I'll tell that story next time. I'm being advised on which mountaintop stories I haven't told yet and could use if I so chose. It's always good to have a reminder that you've got more material than you realize. So, Jesus is there on the mountaintop. He's this, the bearer of the faith between the tradition that he's received and the tradition he will pass on. And Luke says that as he was there, they began to speak together with him about his departure, which translates to his exodus. And we heard about the exodus in the psalm this morning, and we were reminded of the exodus in the story we have of Moses and the tablets, even though it's not fully there. And what do we know about the Exodus? The Exodus is an act of liberating. And so they're there, they're talking with him about the liberation he is about to accomplish, the freedom he is about to impart. And what does Peter do? We should set up some stone houses here, Lord. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Isn't that what we do in the faith all the time? We have this word of grace and liberation, of inspiration and glory, and our instinct is to set up stones and enclose it in and hold on to it for as long as we can. It's a natural instinct, actually, to want to linger in a moment of grace and liberation. Shelter. So we build things like institutions and churches and governments and nations because we have this instinct that we cannot survive just with the liberating moment. We need to structure it and enclose it and hang on to it. And we need to be able to govern it and oversee it. And those are wonderful instincts, and many times they work out well, but I don't know if you've been following the news this week, but for the church, it's been a bad week. It's been a bad week for the church. And I don't mean just the Episcopal Church, though. It's been bad for us, too. Although there have been bad centuries, I suppose. So a bad week every now and again. We had this gathering of folks at the Vatican trying to respond to this tragedy of just a landslide of cases. We are now only beginning to hear the multitude. We knew they were there, but we're hearing the stories of abuse and pain and suffering. And the response was unsatisfying, incomplete. Left you wondering, where's the church? Where's liberation? And then our own Anglican body, the Lambeth Consultative Council, Lambeth, invites all the bishops every 10 years to gather together to have conversation about what the church is up to. And Lambeth took that opportunity to tell the bishops that had same-sex spouses that their spouses were no longer invited to come to Lambeth. Again, we wonder where liberation is. Where is the church? And then we watched in sadness as the United Methodist Church seemed to be pulling apart. And this morning, I know many of you are LGBTQ members in this church. Remember when your identity and existence was being debated here in the Episcopal Church, whether we could welcome and embrace and ordain and marry. And we have watched in sadness as our Methodist brothers and sisters have gone through the same painful conversation. And we are watching it tear them apart. The church has had a bad week. But the faith that was planted in us is not just buildings and structures and institutions. I was mindful this week as I listened to some pretty weighty conversations going on Capitol Hill in D.C. Representative Cummings said, "It is our duty," and I'm paraphrasing, "to hand on to our children a better democracy than we received ourselves." Such a hopeful word. And I'm convicted that that is actually more true in the church. That it is our duty to hand on to our children of faith that is better than the one we received. And so we take those seeds we've been handed, the seed of faith that we hold, that is Christ himself, and we pass it forward to another generation, that it may bear abundant harvest. Harvest like what you see here in the pews today. Food for the hungry. Nourishment for the needy. Sustenance for those who are in need. When Vern started this program, I think he said something like, "When we feed a body, the mind is free to think. Thus liberated, you can do anything." This is an act of Exodus faith. When we give our bounty forward, so they can free others from the bondage that they find themselves in. We too have been liberated by the faith we've been given. May we make that liberation for others here, now, and always. Amen.